2 Degrees, a festival between art and action. Climate, consumerism, community, 17th to 22nd of June 2013. With Louis Bassett, Andrea Franke, Platform, Amy Shoddox, Tom Shivers, and more. Visit artsadmin.co.uk for full details. 2 Degrees.
Welcome to the Clear Spot on Resonance 104.4 FM. My name's Phil England, and tonight we're previewing Arts Admin's 2 Degrees Festival, which takes place next week from Monday the 17th of June to Saturday the 22nd. And the festival is the third in a biennial which brings together artists, activists and audiences to look at what the links are between climate change and austerity and what role we can play in choosing the future that we'd like to see. I'm joined in the studio by the artists behind 3 of the newly commissioned pieces, as well as the festival's programmers, to look at what's happening and the underlying principles of the project. I'm going to start with Mel Evans and Sam Rowe from Platform. Your work has been described as the spy thriller for the post-Occupy era.
Yes.
What does that actually mean in practice? You've actually been doing it for a week already, so you're ahead of the game here.
Yeah, we got in there early, partly to try and get as many audiences in as possible, because it's an immersive, site-specific theatre piece, which 6 audience members only can go on per time. And the performances take place while the city is most alive, so at 9 a.m., 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. daily during weekdays, so this past week and this coming week. And really, Oil City comes out of a whole set of work that Platform has done over the years looking at the finance of the fossil fuel industry. And we wanted to kind of create a work that built on our previous audio tours, both of the City of London and of the Tate Galleries, which you're familiar with, Phil, having worked on one of them. And we wanted to make something that was, something kind of experiential. So it took the audience inside the space of the city, kind of undercover, in order to sort of kind of look at it anew, look at it afresh and raise questions about, well, what's going on in there, and kind of get to the heart of the things that are going on in there. And so from our research, we know full well that the UK banks are some of the biggest financiers of tar sands in Alberta. So this is one of the most horrific, devastating and ecologically destructive projects on Earth, which numerous First Nations groups across Canada, but largely in Alberta, are all challenging in the courts or protesting in the streets. And so having been involved in different campaigns at Platform around that, we wanted to focus on that in this piece. And so, yeah, that's why we've made Oil City as part of 2 Degrees this year.
Okay, we got a little trailer that you made. This is the sound, the audio bit of the trailer. It's a little YouTube video, but perhaps we can hear that to just get a little flavour of what you've been up to.
I came a long way to be here today. If this is the one chance I get, I'll take it.
Look, this is a situation. There's something dodgy going on here. Has to be.
I really don't want to be named.
We can't let this get out of hand. Get me everything you can on them.
This is where they signed it. This is where they signed the deal.
Right, the studio didn't self-destruct, but we all thought it was going to. We've also got Sam Rose in the studio. How did you divide the project up between you? What are your respective roles?
Well, I came aboard onto this as the director. I've got a history of working with kind of socially engaged issues, and kind of like that me and Mel have a long relationship going backwards. So it was great to be invited to do this. So Mel really conceptualised the project and produced and wrote it. And what's really exciting for me coming onto this as an artist was that this was a piece of work coming out of an activist organisation. I've worked kind of like on various different projects where I've been going to charities or kind of NGOs and kind of asking them for information. But what was really great about this was there was just such a richness of thoughts and ideas and research that we could really work with and use, which made the story really, really exciting. Kind of like, and sort of there's just so much depth to the work, I think. I think that's what audiences are enjoying about it, is it's really fun, but at the same time it's just packed with kind of all sorts of different ideas and approaches, and people saying particularly the First Nations angle on the tar sands is something that they haven't really thought about before, and that's been really, really interesting and exciting. So in terms of our process, it's been great to have Mel there, because on the first day we just sort of sat down with the script and Mel just kind of told us everything that she could possibly know. Kind of like, it was a really, really great day, and it's been really important for the actors as well to kind of like get really, really embedded in the in the world of it, because they're really finding that kind of like, because it's so interactive and the audiences kind of like follow them around through all these different spaces, and the audiences are asking them all sorts of questions about it and things like that, and so kind of like it's been great for them to sort of be really, really sort of embedded in it and have a really good understanding of it as well. So kind of like, so that's what's made it really exciting for me, I think. And I hope it's been so for the actors too, and also for the audiences who are all coming back and giving us good feedback.
Okay, so it's continuing for another week across next week. But it sounds like that the audiences are really part of the piece.
The audiences are absolutely embedded in it. It really is down to them. They've kind of got the action, each sort of different stage of the performance, I suppose, by kind of like being led along.
Yeah. And so, quite a few elements play out differently according to what the audience do.
All right. All right. Well, we'll come back to that in a bit. Oh, we've got another extract we can play. Move on to...
This is a section kind of like, this is from one of the characters that the audience meet along the way. She's a Canadian First Nations activist, and at this point she's just telling the audience about the impact of the tar sands on her own community.
And why she's come to London.
Yeah.
The thing is when these deals first came through, 10 years back, we thought it was a good thing. I mean, First Nations people, we had already lost so many rights to the Canadian government that earning some money back off them, it just seemed like the only independence going. I wanted to be near my family, so I worked in these tar sands myself for a couple years back when I was 19. I know, can you imagine me in a boiler suit and a hard hat? I mean, I made it work, but there was nothing like as many jobs as they promised. There's arsenic and mercury in the rivers now, both poisons. We have these deformed fish, just like the folks in Louisiana after the BP spills there. But our waters are contaminated not only by the spills, but by this everyday process of producing some type of oil from these tar sands. One of these toxic tailing ponds leaked into the Athabasca River just last month. And that is where people drink from. And then it gets from there into the moose meat. And that is a staple food for a lot of folks in Fort Chip. Cancer rates amongst our community have soared. People just keep getting all kinds of sick. It scares me, it does. I mean, my grandmother, see, and it's sacred water too. All water is sacred. We are a spiritual peoples, and this is a spiritual fight we're taking on.
Okay, so that's Oil City. We've also got Andrea Frank, is that how I pronounce your... in the studio with us, and whose project is... how do you pronounce your project? Is it Reed...
Read, talk, make.
Okay. Can you tell us how that's working? Is it a community project or an artwork? It seems to be fall somewhere in between the two.
Yeah, I think a place in between the two is a good place for me. And it's a project that started. I've been researching manuals from the 60s and 70s for a while now. I've been always really interested by this moment where people had this. They started challenging ideas about how she would live and what things would be doing, or even to chairs to society. They would challenge all of that in one publication and then share this knowledge with each other. And when the 2 degrees opportunity came, we thought it could be really interesting to have this do-it-yourself and explore this potential. And then we realized that with the internet, actually sharing is something that is very common now, and the manual was a weird idea, but that the biggest problem was actually to have the space and the time to build these things and to test these things out. So we thought it would be really interesting to create in a city or in a community or in a building a space where people could go and make things. And there have been some maker spaces recently, but most of them involve big machinery and they involve lots of investment. And we wanted to do something quite small that could be a model that other communities could copy and decide to have as well. So we found this community that was really open to the idea and wanted to test it. The only thing is they didn't have the space to do it, which kind of proves the point of this problem in cities. So we've been actually ended up creating a tool library and a cabinet and of tools that people can borrow it and they can use outside space when it's sunny. But in the last 2 months, I think we've been actually doing things in the foyer of the of this council state, St. George State, and which is really incredible because then we've been working outside and people are coming by and passing, and it has slowly built up all this interest and people want to do different things and they have different ideas of what to do. So, and I think that's the most exciting part for me, that after these 2 months, we're finally getting to a definition of the project. But it's even hard to talk about it because we've been trying to adapt it to what the people needed and wanted.
Okay, so it's another project that's been going on for some time already, and I don't know, maybe perhaps it doesn't fit easily within the schedule of the festival, and maybe, I don't know, will it go on perhaps after the festival? But it's a project that's based on a council estate, and it's about reclaiming that community space and for the community.
And kind of trying to figure out what type of space, the community spaces at the States are really funny because they, I mean, we've been to lots of states doing this research for this project and they're all kind of business-like and they have like these big tables and carpets and really heavy chairs so they don't get stolen. So they're really weird spaces to work. They just, people just do meetings on them. And it has been really interesting. We've been having, for example, lots of children coming to our workshops and complaining that when it's raining, which is a lot of time in London, they don't have anywhere to go to just be together and just play and do silly things. So what is happening now is next week we have an open day on the 21st of June on the Friday, and we're hosting a discussion from 12 to 2, and we're going to try to get together the Resident Association, but also the Housing Association, and try to decide. There's many people in the state that have ideas of how to take it forward. So some people want to do a making space for children because there's so many teenagers and children that were interested in building things or reclaiming other different, finding other different spaces on the state that we could use. So I think the project has been going for a while, and then we're going to stop on the Friday, and if people want to come by and be part of the discussion, decide where it should go, and then probably it will keep going for a while after that.
But I mean, that's kind of a very unusual approach to, you know, it seems like a community-led project that the audience is the community in a sense. There is no kind of like paying public. It's actually very much embedded in the community.
Yeah, I think they are the main public audience for me, and they are the people that I'm more interested in. Is the people from the state and how they appropriate the project and make it themselves for them instead of for me.
But also, I think another thing that sounded interesting to me about the project was that it could be replicated somewhere else. It could, you know, could be a model that there is potential that other communities could do a similar thing on their estates.
Yeah, I think that's something that's quite important for us, and that would happen afterwards. I think we want to do a publication or something so that we can share the whole experience and then people can replicate and also have the comments of the community, because I may have an idea that I think is fantastic, but they have to say if it works for them or not, or if it's just me going there and selling something that makes no sense at all for them.
Okay. All right. We've also got Lewis Bassett in the studio, whose project is called World Strike. Hi. What's the title about, and what's the project about? How does it? What does it look like in reality, or what will look like next week in reality?
So World Strike is going to be a daily reading group of the Financial Times. I kind of, when I saw on Resonance how you described it as a kind of power breakfast, I quite like the idea. Like, it's lots of different people, from activists to professional or semi-professional kind of economists or like kind of market analysts, to kind of, and from both a kind of like a experience and a non-experience background, so and obviously artists as well, kind of coming together to read the Financial Times, kind of like in the Gherkin, in the cafe at the bottom of the Gherkin each morning, kind of work out exactly what this paper is about. The title World Strike, I guess it was, the intention was to kind of talk about the agency of the earth in kind of financial markets. So like one of the intentions of reading the Financial Times is kind of unpick that a little bit and find out the ways in which the kind of like earth's kind of ecological variables appears in kind of like finance. Okay. But we can talk more about that or something.
Did you want to play your audio extract now? If so,
well, definitely. I took a piece of audio from a scene in Wall Street, which is filmed by Oliver Stone. But like, maybe just to contextualize that, like the kind of, so the reading group is very much about agency, and it's not necessarily just about this kind of like apocalyptic, like the Earth's kind of gonna strike its revenge on the world, which, you know. It's also kind of about like the agency that people have in finance. Yeah, so in this scene from Wall Street, there's the young broker is this guy called Bud Fox, and he's played by Charlie Sheen, and he's really annoyed that the Michael Douglas, who's this character Gordon Gekko, if you've seen the film, he's like the big kind of like shark banker. He's kind of out for himself. He's this real neoliberal guy, and he's dumped all of these shares in Blue Star, which is this company that Bud Fox's dad has worked for all of his life. He's kind of depicted this really like wholesome kind of worker, good guy character. And yeah, so Gekko doesn't really care that like all of the people who work for Blue Star are going to be sacked. And yeah.
What the hell do you want?
I just found out about the garage sale down at Blue Star. Why?
Last night I was reading Rudy the story of Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Pot. You know what happened? Stuck his nose in the pot once too often, and he got stuck.
Maybe you ought to read him Pinocchio, Gordon. I thought that you were going to turn Blue Star around, not upside down. You fucking used me.
Well, you're walking around blind without a cane, pal. The fool and his money are lucky enough to get together in the first place.
But why do you need to wreck this company?
Because it's wreckable, all right? I took another look at it, and I changed my mind.
These people lose their jobs, they got nowhere to go. My father has worked there for 24 years. I gave him my word.
It's all about bucks, kid. The rest is conversation. Hey, buddy, you're still going to be president, all right? And when the time comes, you're going to parachute out a rich man. With the money you're going to make, your dad's never going to have to work another day in his life.
So tell me, Gordon, when does it all end, huh? How many yachts can you water ski behind? How much is enough?
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses. Money itself isn't lost or made. It's simply transferred from one perception to another. Like magic. This painting here, I bought it 10 years ago for $60,000. I could sell it today for $600,000. The illusion has become real. And the more real it becomes, the more desperate they want it. Capitalism at its finest.
How much is enough, Gordon?
The richest 1% of this country owns half our country's wealth, $5 trillion. One third of that comes from hard work, two thirds comes from an inheritance, interest on interest accumulating to widows and idiot sons, and what I do, stock and real estate speculation. It's bullshit. You got 90% of the American public out there with little or no net worth. I create nothing. I own. We make the rules, pal. The news, war, peace, famine, upheaval, the price of a paperclip. We pick that rabbit out of the hat while everybody sits out there wondering how the hell we did it. Now, you're not naive enough to think we're living in a democracy, are you, buddy? It's the free market. And you're part of it. Yeah. You got that killer instinct. Stick around, pal. I still got a lot to teach you.
Obviously.
Oh, buddy, come on. Look, I was going to tell you about it, all right? Calm down, all right? We'll go up to the apartment tonight, have a little dinner. You bring Darian. And...
No, I can't. I can't make it tonight.
Go hey, on. Buddy. Are you with me? I need to know if you're with me.
I'm with you, Gordon.
Natalie, I'll be right there.
So I have to apologise for the some of the language in there. Didn't notice it first time around. But you know what's worse, the language or the heartlessness of capital exposed by Oliver Stone there. But I don't know what how does this relate to your project in?
So yeah, like he's, you know, Gecko's this mad shark, and like he's kind of like, you kind of hate him just because he's this character. He's really hateable, but obviously there's something really systematic going on in all of that as well. And the thing I thought was really interesting in that scene is like Gecko's relationship to this company, Blue Star, who, you know, this company who are composed of like both workers and, you know, materials essentially from the earth. So like, or it's an airplane company. And, you know, and so he just doesn't care. He's really dismissive. And it's this kind of distance that, you know, people who work in finance have between themselves and the kind of substance of value, I guess, is what I'm kind of saying. And the thing, again, about agency is that there's this, that bit in that clip where Gecko kind of says, you know, we produce the rabbit from the hat. We make the price of a paperclip. He's like, you know, you think you live in a democracy? Like, we're in control. It's like, we're the agents of history. And so that's kind of what the FT is about. It's kind of about equipping these people who, you know, claim to have this dominant position, well, who kind of do have this dominant position over kind of like history, over like the production of society, and kind of like giving them a kind of briefing to say, okay, here's how things are going, here's how you guys keep your distance, here's how you guys stay on top, and here's how you guys make your money. And so for us, when we're going to be meeting all next week at 8 a.m. at the Gherkin, we're going to be reading the FT in a different way. In a way, like, we want to give ourselves back a sense of agency over kind of what's happening, and kind of understand these kind of financial mechanisms and these kind of games, essentially, that are set up to kind of play us and to keep maintain that distance.
So kind of decoding the financial daily stories. And you do actually get a breakfast, don't you, with your power breakfast?
Oh, yeah, it's all there. It's all the coffee, the croissant,
a bargain, as well as an educational one. But we've got the two programmers of the festival, 2 Degrees Festival, with us in the studio as well. Just going to adjust the microphones. We've got Sam Trotman and Mark Godber have been programming this festival for the last 6 years, because there's been 3 altogether and they've been every other year. How do all these different projects connect? What's the underlying?
I thought you were about to say, how do these projects fit together? And I was thinking, oh no, that's a really challenging question. And I suppose the reason why we choose these particular projects then is that we've been doing, like you said, this is the 3rd festival. We do it every 2 years. We try to find interesting projects which connect in the kind of wider subject of climate. And it's one thing we say in our brochure, we say, like, every time we talk about it in public, that we want to approach climate with a broad view. For us, like, you shouldn't just look at an ecological or environmental system. You shouldn't just look at what is causing and the effects of climate change. You have to see it in a broader scale. And that's also connected to the fact that we want to try and look at opposition to existing systems and solutions and how we can change and recreate things in the future. So then you really have to look at broad, everything across society. And we've got two projects here that connect a lot with kind of economy and politics, but then that's not necessarily the case across the whole festival. But yeah, that's really always really interesting subject for us. One of the reasons for that is that we, Arts Admin's building, well, our home base is a building called Toynbee Studios, which is in between Spitalfields and Whitechapel. So we're right on the kind of the area which estate agents would call city fringes. Actually, they were calling it that a few years ago. I don't know if it's called that now. Maybe we're just like city now. But it's always been interesting when we're trying to do projects which don't just happen in our building, but take people outside, to take people into the city and to kind of look at the real clash of communities that exists around our area.
I think that's something that we've done every year.
No, if you're on that one, that's fine. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, sorry, mic mix up. Yeah, I think that's something that we've done every year. So 2009, 2011, and now as well, is really looking at how we work with audiences to this work, to not just kind of be passive and to be sitting there, but really looking at how audiences can take an active role within things. So whether that's like with Andrea's project, a lot of the people who live in St. George's Estate, really kind of owning the project and developing it there, or whether it's kind of doing platforms Oil City, and where you're moving around and you kind of know you're doing this kind of spoof caper, but at the same time every other person in a suit there is kind of enacting this spoof caper every moment. So it kind of gives you these kind of new eyes and kind of these tools for looking at things differently and hopefully kind of acting upon them differently as well.
Okay, is there something about action and activism, is that a theme? Or is it less of a theme, actually, in this festival than previous festivals? And if so...
Probably a bit less. Like, I think how Arts Admin came to be working on climate, well, on green issues, as we started off saying, I suppose, on climate, was partly through coming into contact with other arts activists and people who would cite themselves in that way. And Platform is one of those organisations. Like, before I started Arts Admin, before Mel started at Platform, Arts Admin and Platform had a relationship and worked on one or two projects. And they have always been a kind of inspiration to artists and to us in terms of kind of where you situate your work and the kind of the research and the kind of carefulness that goes into what they do. But as well as that, we have artists who we've worked with, because Arts Admin's been in existence since 1979, working with artists in the area in between kind of performance, dance, visual arts, weird stuff that doesn't fit into any categories, which is exactly where 2 Degrees is. And so we've been working with interesting artists like a pair called Heather Ackroyd and Dan Harvey, who've done a lot of amazing sculptural installations, work with grass, with natural materials, with bone. And so in a way, when we decided to commit to doing green projects more, we was looking at that background in a way. And we had been supporting a lot of artists people who define themselves as artist activists. I don't know if people do that so much now. I wonder if that was fashionable, or maybe that's the wrong way to the wrong way to think about it. But when we said, okay, let's do a festival, let's do commission some projects about climate, that was where we went. That was kind of the people we asked. It's so, while sometimes that has been about activism, like, I think actually we've often used the word action more. I think that because there's obviously a crossover there in terms of how you talk about a performance, how you talk about theatre, how you talk about kind of live work. It relates to what we want the audience to be part of what happens. We want people to be active. We think that's the kind of most interesting and inspiring way to engage with this topic, rather than being passive and scared and outside. In your question, you're asking about activism in a way. Yeah, we've worked on projects before which have had direct connections to direct action and activism. Not always, and not all the time. I think that hasn't happened so much this year in terms of the projects that have come forward. We always find that we, by deciding to do an arts festival and deciding to do it in the kind of the budget and timetable and the structure of an arts organisation, means that we're in a completely different we put our ends together in a completely different way to how activists do, or to how campaigning organisations like Greenpeace do. Say, so while we all want some, while we often want to work together, we never quite manage to line ourselves up at the right time.
So a good example of that is in 2009. There was the climate camp in the city happening, where Mark and I were trying to get out of a police kettle to get to the show that was at Toynbee Studios. These kinds of things kind of happen kind of at the same time. And, yeah, these kind of things, I guess, aren't sort of predictable, but kind of come together and things seem to cross over. In 2011, a collective called The Haircut Before the Party, some people in the room might know them quite well, They took over a space in Whitechapel where they cut hair and had conversations around politics of the area, very close to where Cameron sort of delivered his austerity cut sort of speech. But at the same time as that project was functioning, that's also when Occupy kind of sprung up as well. So there was kind of all of these things kind of coming together, and it's really interesting to look at how they start to kind of cross over as well. So how that space became a kind of meeting space for kind of discussions around Occupy, and how the hairdressers kind of went and kind of cut hair at the camp and stuff. So it's quite interesting around that time how these things kind of start to cross over as well.
One thing about when you've been doing a project, like a festival project like this for 4 years, is that the first one happened in 2009 when climate was really like, climate change was like really sexy, really fashionable, really hot subject. And that was building up to Copenhagen, where there was enormous amounts of the Copenhagen COP negotiations, where there was a huge amount of like artist projects there. And it was just very present in the media. And we all are aware that since then it's completely dropped off. We, when we did our first festival in 2009, kind of made a point of saying, we're going to do this again in 2 years' time, before we even did it. And that was a bit of a risk in case it had all gone badly wrong, but we got away with it. And so we've kept to that. So in a way, one of the reasons for that is it's creating, making a long-term commitment to this work, but it's also creating a continuing opportunity for artists and audiences to engage with this work, and it not just be a kind of fashionable thing. I keep saying this year, I don't know if I'm making it up, but I think climate change is about to become fashionable again. I don't know if anyone in the room thinks that's the case or not. Maybe it's just this kind of political peak of when a negotiation is decided by the media to mean something or not, and I think we're about to approach another one. Maybe that's just me making it up.
Wow, fashionable climate change. Dreamy,
not,
huh?
Not a good thing, I don't think.
Difficult to know. I mean, it's fallen off the coalition's agenda entirely, hasn't it? And they're sort of running in the opposite direction. So that's going to cause some kind of crisis, perhaps, I think.
I don't know if this is relevant. I was at this meeting the other day. It was like this really big kind of quite serious like conference thing with like loads of editors of the FT. And Ed Miliband and like just some other like high flying people, and I don't know how I got into it, but they were chatting about climate change in there like quite like intensely. Like it seemed to be the agenda of the day for them. It was kind of like about the G8 and like geopolitics, and it was like a massive issue for them. But there was this moment, and like there's this writer for the FT called Martin Wolf who like does a column on economics, and the end of it he just kind of said, well, in his kind of summing up, he was just like, well, you know, us, meaning like us, you know, like the rich and powerful, like at the end of the day it's not really going to affect us, like, you know, so why would we do anything? Like, he was basically saying that, you know, we're the people in power, but, you know, at the end of the day we're also really rich and we have that kind of distance that I was talking about. It's like, it doesn't really bother us, and that's exactly the problem. That's exactly it, isn't it?
Because
it sort of comes back to what you were saying before, Mark, about seeing climate change and green issues as kind of structural problems that are connected to, you know, all kinds of social problems. And yeah, it's that thing of different people come at climate very, very differently. Mm. Some people will come at it from a kind of, oh, great, we can make money from carbon trading.
Woo! Yeah, right.
Whereas, yeah, you know, like, people who just do stuff around the tar sands to resist the tar sands in Canada are coming from, yeah, okay, if the tar sands were fully exploited, then that would mean total climate tipping point, no way back, you know. And that's one way of looking at it. But actually, also the way of looking at it is, like, there are treaty rights that were signed by Queen Victoria of England that are totally being broken by these projects going ahead. And so, like, let's try and take that to the courts. It's like you kind of see with all these issues, there's always that intersection going on between issues of race and racism, issues of, you know, poverty, and, yeah, issues of Indigenous land rights that all are wrapped up with something that other people might look at as a climate-based issue, when actually it's, yeah, it's much more complex, and there's all these different standpoints to start fighting and resisting those positions from, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think when people kind of pick up a 2 degrees flyer, they're kind of going, oh, well, how is this to do with climate change? Like, this isn't polar bears and ice caps. Like, I don't understand this. But I think that's exactly the point, is all of this is so wrapped up within climate change, whether we're talking about the social aspects and how we kind of organise, whether we're talking about economics and kind of taking ownership of that, or whether, you know, whether it is about our role within public spaces. I think all of that that kind of crosses over into many other things all falls within this kind of climate change argument and discussion and debate. So I think that's kind of why it's such an interesting thing, and why we're able to keep kind of putting festivals out there, because it's such a kind of an area which is so entangled with so many other social, political, economic kind of issues.
Yeah. From a kind of elite perspective as well, the kind of cuts austerity agenda, you know, the banking crisis that we had to pay for, has kind of taken over, hasn't it, in terms of the media narrative and stuff as well. And, you know, linking up these kind of struggles and stuff is perhaps the only way that people can force the kind of tipping point, in a sense. You know, we've got these kind of converging crises, economic, environmental and democratic, and, you know, this is, goes back to your world strike, perhaps. But
yeah. That's it. But I mean, like, the thing about, like, the whole financial crisis is, like, again, it's just another question of agency. I mean, this is exactly what world strike is about. I mean, the thing is that you look at in the Financial Times and you kind of see these ecological variables, right? Like, kind of crop yields, or I don't know, like, natural, or not really ecological, or whatever, some kind of disasters, like a whirlwind or whatever. And that affects, like, different things in the market, but it's about who feels the effect of that. And it's the same with the credit crunch or the credit crisis or the financial crisis. Like, you know, in a way that was produced in the market, but it's not the market or the people who are, like, the agents of the market who end up feeling that. It's kind of like, you know, predominantly, like, poor people who get kicked out of their houses and stuff like this. Like, so it's a question of agency.
And if we can look at some of the other projects that are in the festival, because obviously we've got three in the room, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on.
Yeah, I think there's, let me just count it, there's 11 projects altogether, one of which is actually a kind of day featuring several artists doing other projects. So I have an ongoing joke with myself, I don't think anyone else finds it funny, about how it's a kind of non-growth or degrowth festival. Like, I've always tried to not aim... So the success of...
Work.
Yeah, it doesn't work at all. The 2 degrees does not become a successful project by getting bigger every year, is one of the things we tried to commit to. I think it just carries
However,
on being just a bit too
it's
big.
Got a little bit bigger.
No, yeah, not too much, but okay. A little bit, yeah. But because we choose to be a festival, which means we concentrate most of the activity, what we do in a week. We have a kind of home-based building for it. But as you can tell, the three projects we're talking about here don't actually all happen really in that building. Like, they're while Platforms leads from us into kind of secret locations into secret locations around the city, or all city does. The other two actually start and take place entirely off-site. But we have two performance projects which are happening on the stage of the theatre at Arts Admin, and communicate people with that. We have an installation, which is a piece called Work Table, which is kind of interactive installation about people choose an object and then they go through a process of destroying that object And then they find themselves in a room where they leave their broken pieces of their object and have to take someone else's broken pieces and do something with it to make something new, which is an interesting, like, and while it's a destructive project in a way, it's a really interesting individual process for people about kind of what they choose to break, how they choose to break it, and what they do with someone else's broken object. So that's an interesting project that's running all week at Arts Admin. I wasn't going to run through every 11 project in detail. Do you want to talk about...
Let's talk about the NEF and then I'll talk about Camblack.
You thought that way around?
Then we can go to the...
Great. Okay, so the end day, which I referred to in passing, is a day called Imagine the Great Transition. We're producing that, Arts Admin's producing that in collaboration with LIFT, the London International Festival of Theatre, who are an organisation we partner with quite a lot on climate projects. That day's happened because we are part of a European network of performing arts organisations who want to work on climate change. And together as a network, we approached the New Economics Foundation, and actually specifically Andrew Sims, who's a fellow of NEF, to do events with them and engage with a report they produced in 2009 called The Great Transition, which they were supporting through an ongoing campaign. The reason why we did that is all of these European organisations are producing performing arts projects about climate, and we've all found ourselves moving to working to think about wider ecological and social justice issues while addressing them. And so a vision like The Great Transition report that looks at a kind of way of moving to a more just future while also dealing with the kind of our ecological impact is something really interesting. So we choose to engage with that report in a day. So there's a mixture of kind of talks and discussions and artist projects, some of which are directly responses to or engaging with that report and the thinking of the New Economics Foundation. Some exist already and just happen to be kind of an interesting piece. So that's happening. It's an all-day event happening at Arts Admin on Saturday the 22nd of June called Imagine the Great Transition.
And as part of that as well, there are three films that are now online, which you can see at artsadmin.co.uk/artsonline. Maybe? Something like that. Anyhow, you'll find them. And there's three films made as response as well to that document, which are super interesting. The other thing that we've been working on is with an artist called Kamala Katbamna, who has kind of done a really active call out for people who live or work or commute within a mile radius of the city and Arts Admin's home, Toynbee Studios. So we're working with between 20 to 30 people who have a kind of stake in that area, whether it's through working in the city, whether it's living in Tower Hamlets, whether it's going to the pubs in the area, whatever. Those people have come together and are forming a choir called Change the Record. And that choir have been meeting every week for the last 2 months, and they're going to be on Friday the 21st from 7:30. They're going to be kind of doing a kind of promenade performance, which will result in a tantalising special ending, which you'll have to come on it to find out what it is. But we've got a little clip from their rehearsals that they did a few weeks ago. So it's just one of the songs from the choir. Also, their repertoire is made up of songs that they find important to the areas in which they live or work in the area. So this is a song that's been donated to the choir's repertoire by one of the members of the choir.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, said he. I never died, said he. The cobweb bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. and standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes. Says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego to Maine, in every mine and hill, where working men defend their rights, it's there you'll find Joe Hill. It's there you'll find Joe Hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive and says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, said he. I never died, said he.
Okay, that's pretty good, pretty good. Yes, that was good. We'll work on that. That's
so,
good.
Sam, can you tell us a little bit about that song? It's called Joe Hill. I don't know that much.
Yeah, so... So this is one of the songs that... So the kind of criteria of how you donated the song came from Camilla having these kind of hour-long conversations about, pardon me, how people in the choir would be are kind of connected to the city and whether they kind of had sort of stories around that. So this was donated by one of the librarians of the Bishopsgate Institute, and she... was kind of grew up really super inspired by Joan Byers, and Joe Hill was a kind of labour activist, kind of worked a lot in America. I guess I don't really know much about him really, but you can Wikipedia him and find out, and he's pretty cool. Anyhow, he so a lot of the songs kind of, some of them are kind of connected more to the participants and some are more connected to the themes around the festival. But they've kind of come together on this kind of promenade performance where you encounter these at sort of different locations in and around a kind of mile radius of the city.
Okay, and they've got a cool name, this choir, as well.
Oh, yeah. So the choir are called Change the Record.
Which I like.
Yeah, pretty good.
But choirs, they're one of the things that if people are... polled or whatever about their well-being, sense of well-being. If they're a member of the choir, they're supposed to have a really high, you know, sense of well-being. It's one of those kind of community things that if people participate in, that's it's a good indicator, apparently, of well-being.
Which comes first, the choir or the well-being?
Yeah. Well,
yeah. But I guess, I mean, that's something with this project that kind of came about through the discussions with Camilla, was looking at, so where are these spaces in which people who might work... in the planning offices of the city and who kind of work within the markets and who live there and who work there, where are the spaces in which these people kind of all come together? And where's a kind of like a not a loaded, you know, where you have to come with a kind of face or a role? And the choir is kind of that space. It's kind of where do you find these kind of points to have those discussions at the kind of coffee breaks and... where do you find, you know, not to be too cheesy, but where can there be a harmony, you know, between the people?
Nice. Yeah. So, in fact, in the title of the festival, it's something. What is it exactly? It's climate consumerism. Community.
Climate, consumers and community. Which, yeah, we change that. We change that kind of subheading every year. Okay. That's our kind of topical bit.
But it seems to be, is that the kind of possible two possible futures that we face then? One based on more consumerism, more of the same, or one kind of where we rediscover community in order to live within our means and perhaps get a better sense of well-being at the same time. But so this is probably why... you've kind of emphasised kind of community projects like the one that Andrea's involved in, which is all about community.
Yeah, I think one of the things we try to do with 2 Degrees, like we decided to do a festival, which means you do something for a week, you throw a lot of energy and kind of excitement in one place, and we think that's an interesting way of engaging with the wide topics in the festival. But we've always wanted to work on projects that have a longer time frame of that and try to find a way for them to be part of our festival program and make sense. So this year that was the kind of brief that we gave to Andrea for her project, about to work over a longer period with a community, and that has a presence in the festival, but will go on for a lot longer afterwards.
I think there was something quite interesting about we had this idea of working for a longer time, and then we had the problem of the festival, and we had something for the festival, and that was kind of a nightmare during the whole project. But what was really interesting is that in the final weeks and getting to know more about the residents, they had this plan, or they have been having this dream about having a street market. That's a maker street market. So the idea that they could sell things that they could build. So that was perfect. And then we decided to do this open day with them. And in the end, we're kind of using the festival as a way to start up the market. So they're going to use that as an example so that they can push forward and keep doing the market. And I think that for me was the best solution possible, which was instead of having an open day where people are just going there and kind of seeing them as if they were the artwork, actually they are taking over and they're hosting, and we're just helping them host. And we're just we're just part of one of the things that they're going to have in the market.
Yeah, so we had a similar approach to the project which Sam talked about earlier, the haircut before the party. And Lewis was one of the key people in the collective of making that project happen. That was a shop that opened for 6 months, but the first week of its opening was the first week of the festival, which was a great way of kind of connecting it into the festival and of kind of launching the shop and getting it started. But that project had always been conceived as being a longer term thing, but the festival is a way of us being able to make it happen, and as long as it contributes to festival and kind of works for everybody, I think it has worked out with the projects we've done.
Yeah, and I think also the festival and the projects in it kind of reflect the way in which we work throughout the year as well. So a lot of the projects I work on often do span over that time, but have these kind of points of publication or presentation. At the same time, we also do kind of one-off shows, or we work with artists. Kind of one thing that Art Salmon does is work with artists over a longer period of time to kind of share their work kind of wider. So it's not kind of all totally switching the way in which we work just to kind of make a festival and then kind of retreating back. And it's trying to kind of have that longevity across it. So I think it kind of does that, even though everything isn't just 1 week and then it's gone. You know, we carry on working in the same way after the festival.
And I suppose one of the ways that happens is that sometimes the projects that happen for 2 Degrees are commissioned and become touring theatre works. That's happened once or twice. Or an artist's work has gone on elsewhere. So, like, that's another way it happens. I mean, that's a little bit more of a kind of energy-intensive way of doing it. But we have often tried that in approaching artists' commissioned work, is to make something that could tour.
On which note, Oil City is available for reprogramming. It's pretty much applicable to any city which has an oil company or a gas station and a bank, any bank, in it, which is true because as well as the performance project, we also have a website, which a mobile phone kind of website, which allows people who can't make the performances to kind of go to the different sites, be they in London or in Calgary, in Alberta, and sort of track themselves around the city and look and see the sort of histories of the buildings and the things that have been happening in those places. So we're available for transfers in Calgary, Brussels, Edinburgh.
Yeah, but you've got to get there on the train, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we've got about 5 minutes left. You think about an arts festival that deals with climate change, you kind of think, oh, it's going to be hard stuff about science, and people are going to just try and knock me over the head about, you know, like convincing me that the Arctic's melting or something. Oh no, not going to come to that. But this is you're kind of thinking well beyond that in terms of actually what new forms can come out of that idea of mixing arts and activism. Really, it's really about that cross section, isn't it? And possible futures and what kind of imagining do we need to do to get there, you know?
Yeah, I think that we want the festival and the projects in it to be interesting to, without having to be it doesn't just have to be the fact they're about climate change that makes them interesting. So we want the projects to be fun, to be exciting. We want people to be like, want to get involved without having to necessarily have already been, you know, be a committed climate change activist. Sometimes that's meant that we have had some projects that have kind of got a more accessible route in, like projects about food and about kind of the food we eat and the ecology behind that is often a quite accessible subject for people to get involved. And sometimes that's meant that the projects we do have been about an intervention or a kind of public happening so that you can interact with the work without having to kind of seek it out, buy a ticket, or make sure you're in the right art space at the right time. And we do work in an art space. We work in our building. We've worked with other arts organisations. But we wouldn't want to do a festival that was entirely based in an arts organisation and therefore there was only a self-selecting audience coming to it. So, yes, we try to kind of reach people who might not come otherwise, come connect otherwise.
And I think as well, I think we've all been in enough kind of lectures or presentations where we've seen these kind of consuming graphs that keep going up and the kind of resource kind of going down and this kind of unsustainable thing, and we kind of know it. But I think what we're interested in is kind of looking at other things, looking beyond that. So we're not just kind of always saying, you must change, but it's like, actually, there are loads of different ways in which you can kind of adjust or find different routes into this kind of debate and discussion and action. So whether it is kind of this kind of deconstructing the FT, which, you know, to me, and I'm excited to kind of turn up on Monday, it just seems like this kind of quagmire of text and numbers that is not made, you know, for me, or whether it is just actually feeling like an infiltrator in the city, which, you know, is amazing. Yeah, I think, you know, we can't kind of continue to kind of just show graphs and, you know, people cheering at glaciers falling down, because we've seen that and we know that. And this is another way of kind of going beyond that and imagining sort of thing.
Yeah, and I just guess that's one of the really interesting things, watching audiences return back from Oil City, is it kind of like often they come as six people who don't know each other at all, and they have to go off and work as a team to kind of like solve this thing. And although they're going through, as you say, kind of like it's a bit of a sort of jaunt around the city and kind of like solving these clues, because they're working together, they get to kind of like know each other, and they come back to the cafe where they're kind of like confronted by some of the documents that we based our research on, and they sit for you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, really talking about it in a way that wouldn't necessarily happen, I think, if kind of like people are isolated kind of like away in a sort of theatre space or something, because they are coming together and being asked very actively to make a connection with each other over these issues and kind of like and to discuss them. And so that's been a really lovely thing to watch, I think. It's great.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking about kind of coming together and getting together and having a drink, on the opening night, we want you to all come down and have 7 shots of vodka with us and an artist called Davis Freeman, where you can make your climate promises, which will increase in severity as you get drunker throughout the night.
Great note to end on.
Yeah, except we've got 2 minutes.
Press the bell.
1 minute. So we need to know where we can go for more information that might be useful.
Yeah, so that's, but there's one other project I will just mention in passing, because it's a project that's not at Toynbee Studio, so it's a bit harder to find, is a piece called Hortus, which is made by two artists called Patricia Portella and Christophe Dubuc, and that's going to be at the Dalston Eastern Curve Garden all week. It's on Monday to Saturday, 11 till 6. But pretty much every other project, apart from what we talked about here, is happening at Toynbee Studios. The place, the easiest place to go and find out all of the information is to go to the website, which is artsadmin.co.uk/2degrees. Or if you don't like websites, you could phone our box office number, which is 020-7650-2350. And every project is happening next week. The ones here we talked about, Oil City, is Monday to Friday, 9, 1 and 5. And there are a few tickets left, but they're selling out, actually. Probably will be sold out by Monday or so. World Strike is at 8 o'clock every morning at the Sterling Cafe at the base of the Gherkin. And that is, or again, you can pre-book or just turn up. And Andrea's project is opening to with kind of two public